And indeed, this is Steve Dales, Pet World. Good morning to you. An exciting show and a serious show in some ways, because we're going to be talking about a word that is still very scary. It's cancer in our pets. I also want to respond to the news story, and I congratulate Channel 2 for even covering this story, about the guy who takes his dog to a dog park, a dog-friendly area in Chicago, walks in with his dog, and then he leaves, the dog stays. At first, people thought, well, he's just going to the car to get something. He'll be right back. He wasn't right back. And people actually took action in a very good way, which I want to talk about. And I also want to talk about the legal part of that story as I understand it. All of that right here on Steve Dales Pet World, where I have the opportunity to talk about new and exciting things. And one is a new product that's called Feel a Scratch. This is great because so many cats are relinquished to animal shelters because they're scratching in the wrong place. Similarly, though, so many cats go to animal shelters that have been declawed, and now they have a behavior problem or maybe a medical problem or both as a result of being declawed. So this product saves all of that. But I want to start at square one. So if you're a cat, you scratch. It's what they do. Is that right, Dr. Teresa DePorter, veterinary behaviorist?
Cats will exhibit destructive scratching on, you know, on owners' things around the home. Could be furniture, doorways, windows, and they will exhibit this scratching behavior. And if they have claws, which is the intent for them to make a markation into the surface where they can deposit these semiochemicals, that necessarily destroys carpet, walls, upholstery. And owners aren't pleased with this. As many as 50% of owners report that they don't like the destructive behaviors that their cats do.
Now, on the other hand, there are cats that only scratch, or mostly scratch, where we want them to scratch. So it's not every cat. But here's what every cat is, I think, a blogger. Communicating to themselves, communicating to other cats, if there are other cats in the home, communicating to people, even though we don't understand that communication, by scratching.
Well, yes, I think there are many cats that will use a scratching post that's been given. I also think there are a lot of cats that have selected something in the house. My own cat is starting to chew on the laundry hamper, or scratch on the laundry hamper, and he does it every day. And I've given up a long time ago that this laundry hamper is his now. And so even though it's not the intended scratching post, it's no longer important to me. And when I've talked to owners, I think there are a lot of household items that the cats do scratch on that they don't consider inappropriate because it's no longer important to them.
So what do we do if a cat scratches on something that is important to us that we don't want the cat scratching on? What are our choices? And now there's a new arsenal, if you will. Now, one choice is to declaw. And I want to address that, and please explain what this is and why I suspect your opinion matches mine. This might not be the right solution.
Right. And declawing is a surgical procedure in which we're removing the basically the cat's last digit, and therefore they're not able to have their claws and embed into things. And this is a normal behavior for cats. So I do think it's inappropriate for us to especially automatically declaw cats. So there are many other things we can do to help provide appropriate patterns of behavior, particularly if we start with that cat as a young kitten and establish good patterns and good habits for this kitten to scratch on.
So what can we do?
Some of the things we want to do is look at offering a desirable scratching post. I've done one study, a survey study, looking at the type of post that cats want. And cats want a post that is about 3 feet tall, is about 2 to 3 feet wide, particularly stable. And many of the cats seem to prefer the sisal rope. But each cat's an individual, so we want to follow what surface they like and provide that in the area where they've been resting and then also in the area where they're scratching on other materials. So if their pattern is to scratch in the living room, then we need to provide an appropriate, desirable place for them to scratch in that location.
So how do we communicate to these cats, here is where I want you to scratch? Now, you've defined some of that by providing a post that is of a certain height, that is sturdy. But in addition to that, there is now something new we can do.
Yeah, we have a new product now. Feel Away has produced Feel a Scratch. And this is a product that uses a semiochemical, so a pheromone message that can be embedded into this post that helps draw the cat to that location. Many things when we think about changing behavior, it's how to get something to stop. This is a product where we can now encourage the cat to go to the location that we want. This is applied by using a pipette that has a blue dye in it, has some catnip to draw them, but most importantly, it has a pheromone called FIS, feline interdigital semiochemical.
And you literally put this along, which is easy to apply, on the scratching post, not on the cat.
Not on the cat. Don't apply.
On the scratching post. And this sends a message that you don't smell, you don't notice unless you look at the blue dye, but you could turn it around so you don't see the blue dye so much, right? And you put this on the post, and the cat says, aha, this says my name on it, and this is where I go.
Yes. So especially that blue line needs to be in an upright manner so the cat thinks that it's another scratching mark, so a laceration, and then makes it want to come and scratch in that location. At the same time the cat is picking up the feel-a-scratch product, they're also depositing their own interdigital pheromones to help draw them back to that location and feel as though that's the appropriate place for them to scratch on a regular basis.
And I suppose that's the secret sauce, to get the cat to scratch there a couple of times, and now the cat, oh, that's my place to go. Mm-hmm. The name of the product, again, that we are talking about is called Feel-A-Scratch. Dr. Teresa DePorter, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
So when I was a kid growing up, the C word was called exactly that, and people would whisper, cancer. For pets, most certainly, but for people, too. I wonder if it's still as scary as it was. Dr. Sue Ettinger, veterinary oncologist, how do you perceive this?
I think the cancer word is still just as scary, if not. And one of the things that I always talk about is, you know, a famous star will die, and the little ticker will be so-and-so died of cancer. And they don't tell us that maybe they were treated successfully for 7 years and tolerated treatment really well. So we just hear cancer kills, and that's what people think, that if their pet has cancer is a death sentence. So that's one of my huge missions, is to break down those myths and misconceptions about cancer in pets.
Well, let's start at the very beginning. Uh-huh. Can cancer sometimes, be detected earlier? And I'm asking because my guess, which you will confirm or deny, is that early detection in pets is helpful, as it is in people.
One of my phrases is early detection saves lives. And so one of the cancer campaigns that I've started is called See Something, Do Something, Why Wait, Aspirate. And for that, we're looking for superficial cancers. So for skin cancers and cancers that are right under the skin. And we absolutely know that not only does early detection save lives, it means less treatment, smaller surgeries for the pet, and better outcomes. So the gist of that program, if your dog or cat has a lump or bump that's the size of a pea, which is half the size of a penny, so really, really small, if you see something, we need to do something. What do I want you to do? I want you to go to your veterinarian and ask them to do an aspirate, which is a quick, simple test to figure out if they have a cancer or not.
So let's say that word again and explain what this
is.
So it's an aspirate, and what will your veterinarian do? And I also want to point out, this is not surgery.
Nope.
And it's not really invasive.
Nope.
In fact, peanut butter on one side, if we're talking dogs, that the dog has the peanut butter, and on the other side, and it's quick.
Yeah.
So explain what this is.
I mean, it's the same thing when your pet, I mean, when you stick a needle in the dog to give them a vaccine, it's the same thing. We're sticking a needle in their mass, and we're extracting some cells out to look at under the microscope to find out if that tumor, if that mass is malignant, so is it a cancer, or is it something benign that we don't have to be as proactive for. So it's a simple test. They're awake. They're not sedated. It's very inexpensive. Actually, I will either do them in the room for the pet owners, or I'll take videos of them. And I've posted videos on YouTube so owners can see that the pet's just sitting there. They don't seem to care. If you could do things like give them treats fear-free and stuff like that while you do the aspirate, even better.
Yeah, so we're talking fear-free, which is something veterinarians are now doing. They're being certified for this as individuals. Soon practices will be. And the whole idea is that whatever goes on in that exam room isn't so scary.
Right.
And that can be done. And sometimes when you hear terms like this, pet owners get scared too.
Yeah, and that's why I take videos and I take pictures. And like I said, people can go to YouTube, you know, channels and watch it, or I'll do it in front of the owner if they're happy. Most of, you know, a lot of times owners get scared and they're like, oh, the pet's just wagging his tail while you do the aspirate. But again, the point is to extract some cells and then be able to say, you know what, this is a cancer, we're going to remove it, but we know what it is. Or this is something benign and we don't have to have it removed right away. So again, early detection can absolutely save lives, but we have to get over that fear of finding out our pet has cancer and say, okay, if it has cancer, if we find it sooner, our pet's going to do better.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about that. There are many different kinds of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So just to say cancer, I suppose, means nothing to somebody like
yeah.
you, because there are so many different kinds. And some of them, many of them now with our pets, many have potentially very good outcomes.
Yeah, so if you get that horrible diagnosis that your pet has cancer, exactly that. It's important to find out which cancer they have. Maybe has it spread, how far advanced it is. But lymphoma is different than breast cancer, different than bone cancer. And even among the same tumor types, different pets can do differently. So it's really important. I always tell people cancer is an umbrella term for many different cancers. The same thing in people. You know, some brain cancers are very aggressive and some are not. So again, we want to find out what cancer it is. We need to get information. That's where the power is. Get ourselves educated.
All right, Dr. Sue, people can follow you and learn more about everything that you're talking about. Where?
On my website, which is drsuecancervet.com.
Dr. Sue Cancer Vet, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So this happened a couple of weeks ago at a dog-friendly area in Chicago, where someone walks into the dog park, the dog-friendly area, with their dog, close the gate behind them. They're there for about just, I don't know, a few seconds. But these areas are pretty small, so people notice sometimes who comes in and who comes out, and the dog is there, and the person leaves. Now, at first, the other people in the dog park must have thought, oh, he's just going to his car. And people really didn't think much of it. But they're looking at their clocks, and this dog looks worried, looks upset, because the person who brought the dog is no longer there. All these other dogs are around this dog because it's a dog park. Obviously, the dog's owner has no control over what's going on because he's not there. Time goes by, and people begin to take action. They say, okay, I wonder if the dog is microchipped. I wonder, there's no tag on the dog, but if we could find out who this dog belongs to, they call authorities and animal control. Before they come out, the guy finally returns. Now it's 30 minutes later. It takes that long for him to come back. But he does come back, and some of the people at the dog park begin to confront him. I mean, you left your dog here. We're not even sure that's legal. And by the way, it may not be. So I know what I'm about to say because I wrote the rules for the park district many years ago. I did this. So I know that an adult person must be there to supervise his or her dog or dogs at the dog-friendly area. Now, what I don't know if that's also Chicago law. It's park district rules. That may be different than Chicago law. But nevertheless, he broke the rules, that's for sure. So he gets very belligerent with a person with a telephone who's videotaping all this or is videoing it, you know, on the phone. It eventually makes Channel 2. And, you know, who would have thought in a city the size of Chicago, someone leaving a dog at the dog park would make news? But I'm sure glad it did.